Talking about the environment and climate change really hits home with many people. Tune into KBOO on April 22nd at 6 p.m. for Four Walls for Us All. Join us in an exploration of safe, affordable housing, policy, and the passion to go beyond typical solutions to climate change. Learn how to feel more connected and empowered to protect Mother Earth and our fellow human beings in a way that's accessible to everyone. You won't want to miss it. That's Four Walls for Us All on April 22nd at 6 p.m. only on KBOO.
Here goes nothing.
Tune in to KBOO for Drinking from Puddles, hosted by Brandon, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. That's Drinking for Puddles, every other Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Yeah.
Support for The Dirt Bag comes from KBOO listeners and from One Green World, a family-owned nursery and garden center located in southeast Portland, providing fruiting trees and shrubs, berries, vines, unique citrus, nut trees, vegetables, and much more to people all over the United States. Information at www.onegreenworld.com.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 11:02 a.m. Next up is The Dirt Bag.
Jim, we've reached the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It must be time for The Dirt Bag.
Maybe that's why I'm here.
Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 o'clock. and to my right, all the way from Liberal, Jim Gilbert, and also some very special guests in the studio today for the first part of our show, all the way from Bellingham. Why don't you introduce who you got here, Jim?
Yeah, so it's spring break in Washington, and we brought the three grandkids down by train, and they're spending the week on the farm.
Okay.
Grandpa and Lorraine.
All right. And Lorraine's here, too, who we frequently make reference to here on the show because she's running the outfit there at Northwoods.
And she does an amazing job of plant breeding for the home gardener here in the Pacific Northwest. So I have to...
Yeah, we should have her as a special guest sometime.
I think so. Absolutely.
All right. Well, we'll get to their input here, and then we'll get on to the show, a full show, as usual. So, take it away, Jim.
Okay, well, so first I'd like to introduce Owen Padgett, 9 years old, who, of course, lives in Bellingham and loves mountain biking and doing all sorts of fun things up there. But, Owen, come on over here. And my questions for you are, what fruit do you like the best, and what do you like about being on the farm?
Yangma and kumquats, and I like running around and eating fruit on the farm.
Great. And Yangma is an especially interesting new fruit that we've recently been working on. It's a born native to China and one that most people don't know anything about. So, but it's darn good.
Do you have any mountain bikes for him there on the farm?
We have bikes.
And okay.
They're not the sophisticated mountain bikes that they have in Bellingham, which, of course, have, you know, multiple speeds and all sorts of fun things. But, yeah, bikes.
So you get to ride around on those? Or do you ride around on those? Yeah, he says, okay.
I mean,
he nods.
And
okay.
And I'll introduce Mike Padgett, who's 7 years old, almost eight. And, Mike, you tell the folks what you like, the fruit you like, and what you like doing on the farm. Come a little closer.
I like pineapple, guava, and eating fruit.
Okay, great. And last but not least is Hazel.
I like eating apples and playing with the dog.
Okay, eating apples and playing with the dogs. And Hazel is five, and another one of the wonderful kids from Bellingham. So thanks, you guys, for coming. It's fun to have you, and I'll see you after the show.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Very nice, Jim. Nice to meet them. I hear about them all the time, but your train trips, too. To and fro.
Yep, I'm an expert on Amtrak these days.
Okay, well, what do we have here? Let's see. I do have an announcement that somebody wrote in, one of our fans, Jim. She was very complimentary of the show. She liked many parts of it,
great,
including your hearing about your travels. So that was it was nice to hear that. Let's see, we also have our plant of the month, San Pedro figs, coming up at half past the hour, a garden stumper that is going to tie in with the plant of the month. And we will be talking about how to raise healthy starts inside your house if you don't have a greenhouse, which is problematic for many home gardeners. And I know this because I used to have a greenhouse, and I took that down, and I built a honey house instead where I extract honey. So it's much different now. Mm-hmm. Also, along with raising healthy starts, it's time to talk about planting potted plants. And it's not just take it out of the pot and plop it into the hole or a hole. It's not as easy as that.
That's so true.
That's right.
Yeah.
And Jim mentioned that you're planting... What was it, apricot and peaches in the Dells?
Yep, we have a project going on, interesting
we'll
project
about
going
that.
To the Dells.
Yep. Right. And our Dirtbag Dictionary, perfect flower.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we need more perfect things now.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And if we have time, we'll get to the documentary update.
Sure.
There. But what I'm trying to understand this month, and this is I'm revisiting this from the past because it's still... is concerning to me as to why city planners don't use more yield signs in neighborhoods. Now, why do they put a stop sign in? This is just, I'm going to ask you these questions, Jim. Why do you think they would put in a stop sign? To slow the traffic down? To make it safer? Or to establish culpability if there's an accident? Well, you ran the stop sign.
Well, I know in our region, interestingly enough, over the years I've lived there, there have been several stop signs installed where they weren't before. And in every reason that I can think of, it was because of a fatal accident that occurred when somebody did not stop at an intersection where there was no stop.
Yeah, I'm specifically meaning neighborhoods, you know, where the speed limit is 20 miles an hour.
I think it's probably the same idea that you don't want people driving into that intersection, right?
But if you had a yield sign, I'm trying to figure out to make it more efficient for drivers that if there was nobody there, I mean, they would have to yield to other cars and pedestrians. Of course, they already have to do that for pedestrians. So I'm just wondering, maybe there's studies done. You know, I would think it's safety. But do you know there's a law in the books that allows bicyclists to look both ways and then go through a stop sign? They don't have to stop. And if bicyclists feel comfortable doing that, you know, because they're going to always take second place in the collision with a vehicle, as you know. So anyway, that's what I'm trying to understand this month as I bike in every day. I mean, every month.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Let's, I do have one event to pass along. This is once again at Dairy Creek. In Forest Grove, an annual plant sale. Mm-hmm. Great deals. Many varieties of plant starts for your food, herb, and flower garden. It's a local fundraiser for the local Dairy Creek Community Food Web organization. This is at the Crossroads Church lawn at 1531 Pacific Avenue in Forest Grove. Similar to the one that we announced earlier this month.
Yeah, which was seeds, I believe, right? That was.
Yeah. And they also have tool sharpening available for cheap, I think. Not as cheap as if you win our garden stumper.
That's right. That's right. That's free.
But if you want more information, you can go to the Dairy Creek Community Food Web.org or you can Gmail somebody at dccfoodweb@gmail.com.
Great.
Okay, Jim, what was the most often used tool this month for you?
Well, shovels became...
Shovels. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Became widely used because we were doing a lot of planting. And even a post-hole digger, although actually the post-hole digger turned out to be less nice in the environment we were using it in than just an ordinary shovel. And actually a spade would be a better word for, I always, you know, years ago kind of thought that was interesting, the difference between a spade and a shovel. And for those who haven't thought about that, the shovel is good for moving stuff like shoveling things around, gravel or sawdust or something like that. A spade is better for digging holes because the blade is straight, not curved. So it was a much nicer tool for digging with. So
that's what you've been using.
Been using, yeah, it's a spade.
Okay, I don't know. I haven't done a lot of gardening. I've been doing more beekeeping in the last month. So,
what tool have you used in your beekeeping work?
The wood chop.
Oh, uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, out in the field, I've been putting on honey boxes. You know, bees expand and contract through the year, and they're expanding now, and so we want to just give them plenty of room to put their honey in.
We have sort of a fun thing happen at the nursery. Because there's a gentleman who raises mason bees, and he has like three mason bee, I guess you'd call them hives, so to speak, where he's just recently stocked them, and the mason bees were just really anxious to get out, and we have lots of things blooming, so they're pretty happy little creatures right now.
Right.
Yep.
We have a phone call, but let me mention that I don't know that I said when this plant sale is. It's Saturday, April 26th from 10 to 3. Saturday, April 26th. End of the month.
Yeah, and I will not be here because we are flying to Tasmania.
Goodness.
On the 20th of April. Amazing, huh?
Will you be back for the May dirtbag?
Yep.
All right. Yep. Good timing there.
Yeah.
All right. Maybe this is... let's go to the phone call. Lee.
I got a comment and a question. In response to Jim's fruit from last month that needs processing before it's edible?
Yes.
How about an acorn?
Well, that's an interesting answer. I wonder if an acorn would be considered a nut rather than a fruit. But it certainly does need to be processed before you can do anything with it. Not common, certainly. I can't think of the last time I ate anything to do with acorns, but there are probably ones out there that have some degree of edibility.
Yeah,
yeah,
well, it's
yeah, good point. Good point.
Traditional diet.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then the question I have is, you announced the place where I could get my soil tested. Could you announce that again, please?
I can announce where you can go to get that information. And that,
okay.
Because I don't have that information written down nor memorized, but it's through the East Multnomah Soil and Water Conservation District website. It's just those initials.
East Multnomah
Soil and Water Conservation District.
Okay.
And then there'll
keep be up the good work.
A tab there that says soil test or something like that. You'll find it from there.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
You
keep
bet.
Up the good work.
Thanks,
thanks
a lot.
Thank you for the call, Lee.
Okay. Jim, let's say here, like Lee did, he called in 503-231-8187. That is the number to call if you have a question or, coming up, an answer for the garden stumper. And the first correct answer that calls into that number will get a free hand tool garden implement sharpened. Shovels, spades, hose, shears, loppers, you got it.
And I thought, you know, it was interesting last month because we had this question about a fruit that needed to be processed before you could eat it. And we had two answers. And one was the one I had thought of, which was the olive, but another one was quince. And now Lee brings up one. It'll be interesting. I'm going to try to do a little research to see if an acorn would be considered a fruit or a nut, because my guess is it's a nut. But, it definitely is something that needs to be processed.
Sure. We do colloquially say that, you know, the acorn is the fruit of the oak tree. But you know, that's just common. It's not technical.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Moving on here. San Pedro figs, our plant of the month.
Yeah. Well, I love figs. I mean, I've been eating figs for a long, long time and doing a lot of research on figs and had met people who were really into figs. And Peter Dana was one of the first Portland men that I growers that I ran into that had some really special varieties. He lived over in Southeast Portland near Cleveland High School and turned me on to a fig he had brought from Sicily in the 40s. And we called it Peter's Honey Fig eventually because it was so darn good. But anyway, Lorraine and I went to a fig conference in 2015 in Naples, and we learned a lot there because in Italy, figs are, you know, one of the super fruits. I mean, everybody, there's figs everywhere, and there are lots and lots of varieties and seedlings, because that's another story. But at any rate, we talked about different types of figs. And the San Pedro type of fig is a very unique and special one that particularly does well here in the Northwest. And the reason is, among others, is that the San Pedro fig bears its main crop on there's the Braba crop, it's called, which is the fruit that ripens on last year's growth. So if any of you listeners out there have been watching your fig trees, you know that a lot of fig trees can bear two crops, one on last year's wood and then one on the wood that grows this year. The San Pedro only bears, here in our climate, only bears on last year's wood. The second crop forms, but it doesn't ripen because it requires pollination from the fig wasp. And the little darn fig wasp, which is more like a fruit fly in size, it doesn't live here. So
where it does live, then they do get two crops.
They can get two crops.
It's not necessarily weather related.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. But the weather related, I think the weather is what probably keeps the fig wasp from living here.
See. Yeah.
So,
right.
And that first crop is very heavy, and in the case of the primary desert, the primary San Pedro type fig that we grow right now is called Desert King, which I would guess that anybody listening who knows about figs in the Northwest is aware of Desert King.
Yes.
It is really a great, it's a delicious fig, heavy bearer, perfectly hardy for our west of the Cascades climate, and no disease problems to speak of.
We've had listeners in the past call up, maybe for the garden stumper, and know about these little tiny wasps. Are there any figs in the Portland area that require or that do have insect pollination?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
And a reason for that, this is what I think we did a garden stumper a while back, who said, what plant has flowers that you can't see? And you know the answer to that, don't you, Glenn?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So the fig is that plant because the flowers are inside the fig. And for an insect to get in there is not easy.
Right.
It can't be of much size at all. And the fig wasp, you almost could say male figs, wild figs, we were in Italy and we watched them bring these wild figs into the fig orchard where they were growing a San Pedro type fig. And people were being paid to do this, to bring the figs in, and the wasp would fly out of this wild fig into the San Pedro fig, the cultivated variety.
I see. Yeah. Do people eat the wasps then inadvertently, or is it?
No, they fly back out again because they can't lay eggs in the fig. The flowers are too.
It's not.
But they bring pollen in there.
Why do they go in there to get the pollen or the nectar?
I can't ask them. I've wondered that myself. But they think they think it's like there's something there for them, and then they just get disappointed and have to leave.
I can't imagine that would last too many genetic. Evolutions.
Well, you know, they've learned how to do it, and they're pretty reliable little pollinators. So,
All right.
Yeah.
That's a good story here.
Yeah.
And we keep that in mind when we get to the garden stumper.
Yes.
All right. Ty, are we ready for our first musical break? Okay. He says, sure. Okay. Well, this is in honor of Earth Day. That's coming right up. So all of these have something to do with Earth in one way or another, whether tidal or something about that. But the first one is from, I think this is the first time ever that I've had that the title of the song, the name of the band, and the name of the album is all the same. It's called Big Blue Ball.
Wow.
And this is a Peter Gabriel. Conglomeration of people, but it mostly feels Carl Wallinger, who's one of my favorites, and he actually that's where we get our garden stumper theme. Don't know why, don't know who, don't know what, don't know which. That's garden party or world party. But anyway, this is Big Blue Ball.
Cool.
Awesome. There we go.
Yeah. sometimes feel like they're caught in a landslide. Sometimes everything seems to make no sense at all. But it's so clear.
Well, as usual, I wish we could play more of that, but we've got a lot to cram in here. It's Big Blue Ball with Big Blue Ball from the Big Blue Ball CD. Peter Gabriel collaboration there. Okay, well, let's talk about raising healthy starts. And this just came, all full circle here. Recently, I started tomato and pepper seeds, and the tomato seeds come up within a week, but the peppers take longer. And I don't have a greenhouse anymore, like I said, so I was just switching them around. I'd have to, they grow up, and then they start getting spindly because they grow towards the light, mm-hmm. and so I'll turn them around, and then they grow towards the light again, and I'll have to do this 3 times a day. They really change their direction that much, and I thought, this is ridiculous, so I put them outside, and then, as I mentioned earlier, I went to the wood shop in the basement and was busy for hours. And when I came up, some of them were on their sides, and they just really looked pretty bad. And I mentioned that to Ann, my wife, and she said, "Well, we did have a hailstorm." And of course, I didn't know that at all. But anyway, so then here's the solution. I have a grow light, and so I hooked the grow light up and put it as close to the leaves as possible, and you just raise that up, and so that will take care of some of the spindliness, or it'll take care of the reaching for the light. But the other part of this is that it's better to, if you had a fan going at all the time, that would be probably the best, just to stress them so they're not living a coddled life. And we don't want them to so much that it blows over, but just stress, just like they would outside, lots of wind blowing from whatever direction. And alternatively, what you can do is just occasionally come by and just brush them a little bit. Bend them slightly with the back of your hand or whatever. And that's the way to do it. The grow lights these days are, actually pretty inexpensive. And I think the harder part would be to find some place to hang it. But if you want to grow them inside without a greenhouse, that's kind of what you have to do. Make sure there's plenty of light and that they're moved around a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you can, take them outside, without hail.
Yeah. you need nice to, too. Maybe I pushed it there, taking them out when they had only been up for 4 or 5 days. Mm. So, but you eventually want to harden them off, as we say, and that's taking them outside for ever increasing longer periods.
Sure.
But not leaving them out like I did for a hailstorm and hours.
Weather is unpredictable, but if it's a nice sunny day and no clouds in the sky, and probably they'd probably love it to have get some of that light.
And the grow lights they have these days, which are LED, or they can be grow LED lights, they're just 20 watts. Mm-hmm. And I leave mine on for, I can't remember how many hours, maybe 18 hours. I have it go off at 10 o'clock and come on at 6 or something like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So, you do want that dark period.
Yeah.
Okay, let's, before we get to the garden snipper, let's see about your, or talk about planting potted plants.
Planting potted plants, which I have been doing recently, so it's top of my mind right now. A potted plant is generally a pretty happy plant, but they have certain characteristics that a bare root fruit tree or fruit and shrub doesn't have. One is because they're inside a pot, the roots will circle inside the pot. That's fine for being in the pot, but when you put it in the ground, you don't really want your roots to continue circling. Where are they going to circle to, right? So probably the most important thing, or two very important things in potting a potted plant in the ground, is one, make the hole big enough. I've watched some of our employees occasionally, they'll start off with a post hole digger and dig a perfectly round, exactly same size hole as the pot, and then drop the plant into the hole. Not good.
Not recommended.
If you've got the energy and wherewithal and all that, I'd make the hole like three times bigger than the plant, or at least twice the diameter of the pot.
And how about deep?
And a little deeper. It doesn't have to be super deep, but I would say, 3 or 4 inches deeper at least.
Because we want to plant the end. Soil level will be the same level that it was in the pot.
Right.
You don't want to bury any more of the stem.
Right. That's right. And so what I do, this is the Jim Gilbert technique. So here I have this hole I've dug, and it's a little deeper than the depth of the pot, and it's wider, it's bigger in diameter. I take that potted plant out of the pot, and I loosen the roots. And generally speaking, a plant that's been in a pot for a while will have a fairly tight root system. Mm-hmm. So I put it on its side, and I massage it. Some of the plants I have been planting recently required more than a massage.
Deep massage.
I got pretty tired doing it. But if you massage it, you can roll it around. You can just keep pushing it. You will eventually loosen up that root system. And then I will insert my fingers into all of those roots and start pulling them out. And, some will break off in that process, but a lot will come out. And then once I've got a good bunch of roots out and maybe the remainder of the actual potting soil is maybe half of what it was when I started, it's still holding soil, but there's not as much there. I'll hold that potted plant up, make sure that the roots are free of each other, pull them down so that they're kind of like a beard, you could say, hanging down from the pot. And depending upon how far down they are, I will prune some off, because my second step is, after loosening up the roots and digging, or third step, actually digging the hole, I make a little mound in the center of the hole, a little mountain.
Like a little volcano that is erupting, building from the inside the hole crater.
Yeah. Take some of that soil that I've taken out of the hole and make a little mountain in the bottom. And that's what I use to place the potted plant, and the roots kind of drape around that mountain.
Mm-hmm.
And I make it tall enough so the top of the plant, the surface of the potted soil, is the same level as the surrounding soil where you're planting it.
So when you mentioned earlier that, maybe digging the hole 3 to 4 inches deeper, that you do that and then you build this mountain.
That's right.
Small mountain.
That gives a place for those longer roots to have a home, so to speak.
Right,
and then they can eventually grow out into the surrounding soil. And then after I've put that, I've made the mountain at the proper height so that the plant is at the proper height in the planting hole, then I take that soil that I've dug out of the hole and I put it back around the sides of the plant, working it down inside until it's full up to the top, and maybe even just a little bit higher, because it will settle.
Right.
And
you water it.
And then you water it in.
Mm-hmm.
That's really important to water it in.
Mm-hmm.
And depending upon the growth rate of the plant and its growing condition, If it's a dormant plant that's not growing at all, it doesn't have leaves yet pushed out, it probably won't need any water for a while. It takes about 2 weeks for the root system of that potted plant to establish itself into the surrounding soil. So you want to make sure when you're watering that you water the center the actual pot, the plant that you potted, not the surrounding soil, because that's not going to really do it. You want to make sure that center part stays moist until the roots get established. It's really important.
I do remember a piece of advice from the late Lucy Hardiman about getting ready to plant a potted plant. And that was to, because some of them, you know, flowers particularly that you might get from a garden store, they might be, especially if it's a big box store or something, you know, they might be pretty dry. She recommended like soaking it in a 5-gallon bucket for 24 hours before planting, just to make sure that all the water gets, you know, thoroughly absorbed there. So.
Sure. That's if you have a plant that feels like it's dry, soaking it is a good idea.
Yeah.
For sure.
Right.
Especially if it's trying to grow. I mean, if it's a dormant plant, it's not as important because you'll be watering it after you plant it too.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Potted plants do really well. We do potted fruit trees all the time. In fact, that's why I was planting potted figs just recently, and we're planting olives and some other very interesting things, and they do fine. But it is important to loosen the roots and make sure that you water that potted, the actual potted plant, until the roots get established so it doesn't dry out. Eventually, I think the weather will change, you know.
Yeah.
It was certainly rained a lot yesterday. My gosh, I was like, geez, stop.
Okay, well, let's get on to our garden stumper. Are you ready for that, Ty? We'll play that little bit again. Okay, it's time for the garden stumper. Okay, well, right in line with Jim San Pedro figs, the garden stumper is what other fruit, or fruits possibly, produce two crops on one season's growth, but it's on that same growth. Another fruit, common. Okay, if you know the answer to that, 503-231-8187, and the first caller with the correct answer gets a free garden tool, a hand garden tool sharpening, from Coley Farm Store in Northeast Portland, 42nd and Alberta. All right, what other fruit produces two crops at different times of the year? All righty, let's see. What do we have coming up here now? Well, I do want to hear about your experiment, or not experiment, but your project that you have going in the Dalles.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can describe that. Many listeners who have been following the show know about my frequent laments about how hard it is to grow an apricot here west of the mountains.
Yep.
Yep. We at Northwoods started off a very long project with that a few years ago. Planted over 100 varieties of apricots, a whole lot of seedlings. We actually still have some live plants at the place, but I probably less than a dozen or somewhere around that number. However, we also, in that process of our apricot experimentation and research, we were I think I might have told you the story about, we went to New Zealand and we discovered a genetic mutation of apricot, which basically allows the fruit to ripen, but it doesn't get super soft, so it can be shipped. And that's a pretty unusual thing, because it's one of the reasons we can't buy ripe apricots in stores here in the Willamette Valley, is because when they're fully ripe and most delicious, you can't ship them, they're too soft. Anyway, so this was a pretty interesting discovery. And my daughter used to live in Salt Lake City, the mother of the three grandkids. And we were in Salt Lake City visiting, and we were there in March. And I went to the local grocery store, and they had a bowl full of apricots from New Zealand. And it didn't take me too much thinking to figure out that March in Salt Lake City is September in New Zealand, and ripe apricots in September would be pretty unusual, you know, here. Mm-hmm. I mean, they ripen a lot earlier than that. So we bought every apricot, and they were still firm, but ripe. So we bought 49 apricots for $49 and planted the seeds.
Oh, well, I see.
So from that, we have I don't know, 20 or so plants that came out of it that we think might have, at least some of them might have this characteristic. Hmm. because they came from that at that time of year. But we can't really put them outdoors here to test them. So we're testing them in the Dalles. And so we grew them in a greenhouse in the soil inside a greenhouse for
here
a year here.
Yeah.
And then dug them up. They're pretty good size now. And along with some peaches that we had that were pretty unusual too. And we've transplanted all those to the Dalles. We've met a really nice couple there who are interested in this project and have a fenced piece of ground so the deer can't get to them. And we spent 2 days. It wasn't easy. I mean, they thankfully dug the planting holes big with an auger.
Oh yeah, nice.
And, you know, and then we put the trees in. And
when did you put the trees in?
Well, it was last week.
Okay. Yeah. So we've got a. When might you expect fruit then?
Well, it's possible there could be some fruit this coming year. I mean, these are big trees, and they had some fruiting wood still left on them. So it's possible they could have some this year, but for sure next year.
Well, you'll have to keep us involved there.
It's fascinating. And a backstory with this for me is that if we find a variety that has this characteristic and is good, this could be a new crop. This is not known in America.
Yeah.
This particular crop is not grown here. And wouldn't it be nice to eat a delicious ripe apricot here?
Want to name it the dirt bag, but that would be nice, wouldn't it? The dirt bag apricot. Okay, let's go to the phones.
Okay.
All right. Who do we have here?
Hello, it might be the strawberry.
Well, I should have made more, narrowed it down there. A strawberry continuously produces, but this is a crop that I'm thinking of here that's just, it's two different seasons.
And a quick note on the fig. Perhaps the little wasp is doing what in science is called faux copulation with the teeny, almost invisible flower of the fig. Thanks.
Okay. We'll have to.
I'd not heard of that before, but that's.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll have to check that out then. Okay. Another call?
There you go.
Yes. Yes. You have a guest for us? Not that person. Well, if you got hung up, call back again. So we're still looking for the answer there. We'll narrow it down here. So we already did. You know, it's not strawberries. But this has two different seasons.
Two different seasons. I mean,
yeah, just like the San Pedro, like, you know, you might say they produce in the summer and then again in the fall.
Yeah, got it.
But this is, I'm not going to tell you yet when, what the two seasons are. Because somebody could probably get this.
Okay.
I grow them in my garden. Many people do. Mm-hmm. Methinks.
Should you tell if it's a tree or a bush or a vine? Or
I haven't said that yet.
No.
But it's a fruit.
It's a fruit.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And, you know, it's not something that just has a long season of different ripening.
Right.
Okay. We'll keep going, but we'll narrow that down there. Why don't we take, this is our second musical break here. It's very short, but I thought this was going back to Woody Herman. And so the song is called The Good Earth. But on the CD set that I have, which is called The Complete Columbia Recordings, they had like four different takes of this. But one of them, which I thought, that's just that's just pure good. And it's just the rhythm section. And it's only 45 or so seconds long. But at the end, you'll hear him say, okay, that's enough. So anyway, this is the Woody Herman and The Good Earth. All right, cut.
Nice.
Yeah. Just a trio there. real musicians there.
Yeah.
Woody Herman. Although we didn't hear Woody Herman. Woody Herman's clarinet player. Okay, let's see. Let me put on my glasses here and see where we're at here. Oh, let's talk about Perfect Flower.
Mm-hmm. Perfection in the flower world.
This is our Dirtbag Dictionary. We're going to define perfect flower.
Yeah. Well, one thing I realize is grandkids are a great distraction. And I was going to do a little bit of homework on flower names of flower parts, but unfortunately I didn't get a chance to do that. So you may be able to help me with this, Glenn. But,
okay.
But the basic idea is there are flowers that have, like, for example, on a hazelnut, there is a male flower and a female flower. There's a
on the same tree.
There's the catkin, and then there's a little tiny female flower. So those are not perfect flowers. A perfect flower has both the male and female flower parts in the same flower. That's the basic definition of a perfect flower. And then, of course, when then the question is it self-fertile? Can the pollen of that flower pollinate itself? Or does it have to come from a different variety?
Or does it have to come from another perfect flower of the same tree? Or another flower on the same tree? If it's self-fertile.
If it was self-fertile, it shouldn't have to come from another flower on the same tree because they would be the same flower.
It can pollinate itself.
It can pollinate itself, yeah. And that's always a good thing to know about if you're planting a fruit tree, for example, because you might need to plant two different varieties so that even though they might have perfect flowers, like apples have perfect flowers, pears have perfect flowers, but they don't. They typically need another variety for pollination.
So why would a tree evolve that way? I wonder. I mean, why would they have a perfect flower that doesn't mean anything?
Yeah.
So to speak.
Yeah. You know,
maybe that's an imperfect flower. I mean, there's a name for it.
Yeah. Well, the perfect flower idea is the fact that it has all of the parts. But it's not. But in terms of cross pollination, that's another story,
which we don't have the answer for here, do we?
Well, I can come up with.
Darn grandkids!
we know pollen, and we know anthers and embryos, and there are stamens and anthers, which are
stigmas. Stigma. That's where the pollen gets stuck to.
So that's part of that's the female part of the flower, mm-hmm. and the stamen is the stem that holds up the anther, which is the male part of the flower.
And the pistil's in there someplace. That's the female.
That's the female part. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I didn't study botany and flower.
No, me neither. But I've studied it, but I still don't remember.
Yeah. Yeah, and your bees are doing work with flowers, and flowers are pretty amazing, really. I mean, they're just blooming like mad right now. And as I was just mentioned earlier about Lorraine, I mean, her work is fascinating because she's been doing a lot of cross pollination. She collects pollen from, for example, from apples. She can take off the male part of the flower and collect the pollen from it. And because she does that, the flower no longer is attractive to bees. So they don't come and pollinate the female part of the flower.
Well, what if they're coming for nectar?
Well, they don't. Apparently, they don't aren't attracted to it. That's what she told me.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go back to the phones here. We'll take a break from this. Okay. I'm sorry I didn't get the name. Trevor.
Yep. Hi.
Yeah, you're on.
I think the answer you're looking for might be raspberry.
Yes. That's it.
Raspberry. Have a spring and a fall ripening.
That's right. But it's more like a fall and then spring ripening.
Right.
On the same
way you want to go.
Well, yeah, because it's the new growth happens. Well, the new growth is coming up now, and it will then produce fruit in the fall. It overwinters, and then another crop on those same canes produces another crop. They call them everbearing, you know, so-called everbearing. They're not everbearing, but as you correctly pointed out, there's two crops. So yeah. That's it. And if you are interested in the tool sharpening, just hang on, and our board operator, Ty, will get your name and phone number. Thanks for calling.
I have a quick question about raspberries, if you don't mind.
Sure.
It's my first year planting some, and I'm wondering if there are specific soil conditions that are more beneficial for good fruit for raspberries.
I think the main, well, always, you know, plenty of organic matter, which can be supplied on the top of the soil every year. Hmm. But well-drained is important for the crowns of raspberries. You don't want them sitting in water. And
okay.
If you're in Northeast Portland, you don't have to worry about that because we have too good drainage.
Right. Cool. Okay. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Thanks for calling.
If you have our farm, you could take a walk and I can show you some poor drainage. And my feet are still wet walking through it this morning.
Ah. Okay, well, I was going to go to the musical break, but Ty's on the phone right there. So did we cover enough of that perfect flower?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I do want to contrast then that with, I mean, do they call them imperfect flowers?
I would say so, yeah.
And
sure.
Then,
I've not heard that term exactly, but yeah.
I mean the ones that only have one...
one sexual part in the flower.
Yeah.
Like a male flower.
On a tree.
On the tree, yeah. Yep.
And then are there some plants that only have males and only have females?
Yeah,
like
sure.
Like the kiwis.
Sure. Sea berries, they're male plants, female plants.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And what do we call those flowers? Don't know. I have to have another dirtbag dictionary.
How about pretty?
Yeah.
No, actually, seabury flowers aren't that. They're pretty indistinct. But yeah, we'll have to come on. If there's a botanist on the phone,
yeah, that's they're listening. That's true.
Yeah, we encourage calls to help out.
Okay, Ty, we're going to go for our last song here. This is from the. I don't think it was the first album by Sugarloaf. And when I always thought of Sugarloaf, I always thought of the Sugarloaf Mountain in Rio de Janeiro, which I was on about 5 months ago.
Oh, wow.
But as I find out from Dr. Wikipedia, the name for this band is from a mountain outside of Denver. Anyway, you probably remember Sugarloaf, the band Sugarloaf, with their only big hit, which was Green Eyed Lady. But we're not going to play that. We're going to play the title track of the album, the CD. It was an album when I got it. Spaceship Earth,
mm-hmm.
Sugarloaf.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Okay. Spaceship Earth. Birthday coming up here. 22 of April.
We need it.
Yeah, we need a lot of things now.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it's been a few, it's been a month or so since we've had an update on the, I mean, more than a month since we've had an update on the documentary.
Sure. And the documentary project continues on, and some of you know, have heard, listeners have heard.
Yeah, we should
talk about it.
Right. You know, but it's called
An Oregon Story.
Yes, having to do with the land use.
Yeah, and which is an amazing story about Oregon, the only state in the Union that has done this so much to protect its farmland. And I'm still, every time I think about it, I'm just so proud to be living here, and all of those people who did all that work 50 plus years ago. When you drive outside of Portland or any city or town in Oregon, you don't drive into strip malls and subdivisions. And that reason is because we have urban growth boundaries around all of our cities and towns. And as I said before, that's unique to Oregon, which, you know, we have some of the best farmland in the world here, and I'm so happy to be out there growing stuff on it.
It may come in more and more handy if we can't buy certain things from certain places in certain countries.
Oh, man. Let's not go there, Glenn. There's,
nope.
But
nope.
Anyway,
nope.
Yeah. So particular issues that are going on here, that arrangement is constantly under attack. And
just this year or last couple of years ago from our governor.
Yeah.
But then that was pulled back. So
yeah,
that's
that
good.
Particular issue about that, those 300 and some acres out by Hillsboro for data centers or some, I don't know if you've ever, you know, one thing that's amazing, we went to the Dalles to do this planting.
Yes.
I was so surprised to see steam pouring off of these buildings off in the distance. And Lorraine pointed out to me that they were data centers that are there.
Yeah.
And the amount of electricity they use is incredible, apparently. But at any rate, keeping our farmland, I think, is really important for a lot of reasons. We want, you know, environmental reasons, climate change, food security. Who knows what's going to happen, you know, down south. There's already been problems down in Southern California and Arizona with food production. That fertile farmland is pretty darn valuable, and I really believe in keeping it that way. And so the challenge is there's, you know, developers love it because it's easy, it's flat, just go out just build your buildings on it and stuff. And what the nice thing about the land use planning program is that it encourages smart growth.
Okay.
Compact growth inside cities, so you don't have to just go sprawling out all over the countryside. And that's what we're, you know, working at doing. And
and when we got to wrap it up here, Jim. Sure. So when that when your website, they can get more information when you're at the website when it gets back up.
Yeah, apparently the website I found out this morning it expired. So hopefully it'll be back up by this afternoon. But anoregonstory.com is the place to go. And you can you can see a full-length version, a 25-minute version, and a 3-minute trailer of the movie.
Excellent. Okay. Jim, thanks a lot. Thanks to all our callers. And thank you very much, Ty, for coming in to be our board operator again. Appreciate it. This is Glenn Andreessen. We'll be back in a month, both of us. Jim will be back from Tasmania.
Tasmania.
Okay. Thanks for listening. Be well.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM. The time is noon.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Jazz Lives, right after these news headlines.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM.